Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
It's Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance recommended.
What sail off the clear coast?
Jack Ward here with me smitten kitty on board Viola's Reach, making our way down south from Newfoundland. Looks like Blackbeard's caught up with us, so while we hoist our mizzen sail, let's roll back those clocks to the voyage of the Scarlet Queen and our double feature, The Derelict and the Wandering Boy, and Fang Rubies and the Black Siamese. Make speed, me hearties! Catch the wind before he catches our scent!
Entry, the Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 9 degrees 13 minutes south, 146 degrees 30 minutes east. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, departed Port Moresby, New Guinea after completion of salvage and rescue mission. Reason for mission, the derelict and the wandering boy. We were 50 miles off the Lewis Eight Archipelago, standing across the Coral Sea when we ran into the wall of rain. It blotted out the whole world. From the wheel, I could hardly see the Queen's bowsprit or the tops of her spars. And it continued. It brought squalls with it. The drops slanted across our decks and bit at us like insects. With nightfall, the visibility dropped to zero. We reefed sail, leaving aloft only enough canvas to give us headway. We inched forward blindly into complete streaming darkness. I was at the wheel and my chief mate Gallagher was below. He'd been at the radio sending out our position, speed, and course to any ships that might be in our vicinity. In an hour, he hadn't found any. It didn't take long to realize that things had changed when he came out of the cabin.
Well, I've got some great news.
Oh, yes, Skipper.
What's up, Red?
A distress call from the steamship Lawson. Captain Mark Reedy. And a great night.
Holy. What's her position, Red?
She's aground on a reef about 20 miles east of here in Mesima Straits. She's our baby, Skipper. There's not another ship within 12, 14 hours of her.
With visibility like this?
Yeah.
Okay, Red, we'd be a fine pair if we didn't take a crack at it.
Hey, Gordon!
Aye, sir.
Break out the watch. Stand by to trim sail. We're changing course.
Go on, plot us a course, Red. We'll see if we can find her.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in the voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
We maintained radio contact with the Lawson as we groped blindly toward her through the rain. We learned that she was a small 1,000-tonner, carrying mixed cargo and 8 passengers. She was aground by the head, a hole torn in her forward plates by the sharp coral of the reef. We requested her to rig her brightest searchlight and to swing its beam in the direction of our approach. But a few hours later, when we picked our way carefully into Massima Straits, it was her steam whistle that caught our attention. Its monotonous call reached out for us across the rain-swept water. Then we picked up the faint glow of her light. And 40 minutes later, we pulled alongside.
Heaving line aboard you.
We're ready for you.
Okay, Red, toss her aboard. Good, Red. Send one hawser aboard, Red. We'll keep a strain and stay off the reef with the engine.
All right, Nielsen, that's stop with our line of go. Hold it, take a turn around and just say.
And Larkin!
Yeah?
Send a couple of men to give me a hand at the ladder. I'm coming aboard.
Pick up our call, Captain. We're in a bad
way. I can believe it. She sounds like she's ripping her belly out on the reef. Are you the first officer?
That's right, sir. Tom Grist.
Where's Captain Reedy?
Oh, up in the chart room, most likely. 3 sheets to the wind, the way he was when he piled us up on his coral. If he doesn't lose his papers over this one, I'll be shark bait.
Yeah. I'd better pay him my respects, don't you think?
Well, the ladder to the bridge deck is right through that passageway. I'd better stay on deck.
Okay, Chief. See you later. As I stepped through the passageway, the sounds of rain and water lowered, and the groan of the ship's bottom tearing itself on the reef seemed louder. I swung up the ladder leading to the bridge deck, past half a dozen frightened passengers huddled in the ratty little dining saloon below me. I found the chart room door just forward of the top of the ladder.
Might you be?
Captain Philip Carney, the Catch Scarlet Queen.
What might you be doing forcing entry into my ship's chart room?
We picked up your distress call, Captain. We're standing by to...
Distress call? Why, that mutinous devil, he took it on himself, did he? He'll be up before the shipping board minister. Mr. Grayson! Mr. Grayson, report to the chart room! He won't even answer me. Mutinous fool. Captain Mark Reedy never sent out a distress call in 40 years at sea. Cast off your ship, Captain. Leave me alone.
You better drink some coffee and get yourself back on an even keel. You got a ship breaking up on the...
It's my ship.
You can have her, Reedy. She won't live through a change of tide. Rising water will lift her free so she'll sink from that hole in her bow. And she'll capsize if the water falls with her head jammed on the reef the way it is. Take your choice.
Would you... join me in a drink, Captain?
No, thanks. I'm going down and start transferring your passengers to my ship and as much of your valuable cargo as I can handle.
Oh, wait a minute, Captain.
Yeah?
This is my ship. I don't know what you think of me.
I don't mind telling you. I think your line should have retired you 10 years ago. I don't think you're fit for a command.
Sit down, son. I want to ask you one question.
Make it short.
How long have you been sailing these waters, son?
Long enough to stay afloat, Captain Reedy.
I've been navigating this run from the Solomons and Lewis Aids to Port Moresby since I was as young as you.
Yeah, yeah.
Drunk and sober through calm and gale.
Yeah, well, you only have to miss once, you know.
Just let me finish, son. I come in to Massima Strait tonight the same way as I come in 100 or 200 nights before, standing the wheel myself. Now, you don't do it by chance, son. Not when you make it as many times as I have.
Come on, get to the point, Captain.
Hell, there's a lighted channel, boy. As long as you keep it well on your starboard, you miss this cluster of reefs. That's why it's there.
Why are you giving me this story, Captain?
Because the channel boy was on my starboard, son. Well on my starboard, like it's meant to be.
Huh?
As sure as I'm sitting here, son. Carney.
Go,
Carney. My case will look better in Admiralty Court if I can prove I went aground due to accident instead of carelessness.
Yeah, I know. You think the channel boy broke loose?
That's what I think. I know it was well on my starboard where it belongs when I went aground. It'll not take you long to have a look, Captain. The boy is still there on the starboard.
Yeah, it won't take long for this tub to capsize or sink.
They'll take my command, Captain. I'll pay you for your trouble, if that's what you want. I've been a seafaring man all my life, son. I know nothing else.
All right, Captain Reedy, I'll start putting your passengers aboard my ship, then I'll go take a look. You better start getting your gear ready, too, if you want to keep a deck under you.
If you find the boy out of position, I'll leave with you, Connie. If you don't, I think I'd rather stay with my ship.
You're old-fashioned, Captain. We'll talk about it later. You could feel the gentle jarring of the ship grinding on the reef now. It seemed as though the fore and aft angle was becoming steeper as the tide dropped from beneath the stern. When it went far enough, I knew the ship would tear loose from the coral and settle on its port side. Two of the passengers waited for me at the bottom of the ladder, a man paunchy and badly used by the tropics, and a younger woman with a calm, almost indolent expression in her dark eyes. The man's expression and attitude were different.
Captain Carney, I am Frederick J. Wade, the Owen Stanley Gold Mines Limited. This is my wife.
Hello, Captain.
Yeah, how do you do?
Captain, wait. I must have a word with you.
Make it short, Mr. Wade. I'm going to start putting you passengers aboard my ship.
The very question that was in my mind, Captain. But it so happens that I am traveling with a fabulous cargo.
He doesn't mean me, Captain.
Well, that's a little surprising, Mr.
Wade. Don't interrupt, Freedom. It so happens, Captain, that my company placed me in charge of the transport of over 3,000 ounces of gold from our mines on the island of Blood S to Port Moresby. We had the misfortune of being forced to use this miserable bottom, so I must
you
ask
must
you
ask
to...
me to save it for you.
Yes, you will be amply repaid for its safe delivery.
I'll do what I can.
What you can, sir. Good heavens, it must be saved.
Look, I got eight passengers and probably 20 crewmen to put aboard my ship, Wade. If there's time and room after they're taken care of, we'll load your gold.
Oh, well, then by all means, Captain, let us proceed with all the speed we can muster. I'll go to my cabin and prepare myself for the transfer.
He takes good care of me, doesn't he?
Well, don't worry, Mrs. Wade. You're surrounded by men to take care of you.
That sounds interesting. But I'm not worried. Our condition isn't as serious as you led my husband to believe, is it? Tom said we didn't have anything to worry about.
Tom?
Yes.
You mean Grierson, the chief officer?
Uh-huh. Tom to his friends.
Yeah. Well, I hope Tom's right. But in case he isn't, I think you better get your stuff ready, too.
It would be quite a feather in your cap to salvage as much gold as we have aboard, wouldn't it, Captain? To say nothing of the money it would put in your pocket.
You think I'm scaring you off this hulk just so I can earn a salvage fee, you better find a life jacket. We'll pick you out of the water when you find out I'm not kidding. The rain had lightened by the time I got out on deck. The clouds above were beginning to thin and silver some from the moonlight above them. Grierson stood by the ladder waiting for me.
Well, did you get him sobered up, Captain Carney?
Oh, yeah, Grierson. He was making headway when I left. I want you to start putting your passengers aboard the Queen. I'll be back before you finish with him.
Where are you going?
My chief mate and I are going to take our small boat and row up and take a look at that channel light.
What the devil are you going to do that for?
Well, maybe your skipper wasn't as drunk as you thought he was. He seems to think that boy broke loose and is out of position.
He's crazy. And you must be two to go along with that. He was just drunk, that's all.
It won't take long to find out, Grierson. If it's true the boy broke loose, he won't lose his master's ticket. So at his age, I guess he deserves somebody looking into it, huh?
It's your time, Connie. Go ahead and waste it.
Thanks. I like to see an officer support his captain the way you do. Go on, get started with the passengers.
Gallagher! Sheriff Skipper! Get Nielsen set to receive passengers! You put the small boat over the side. We're going for a short trip.
In 20 minutes, Red and I had pulled 100 or so yards of the lighted channel buoy, picking our way through the reef points by the phosphorescence swirling in the currents around them. We shipped our oars. Red held us steady at the light well. I threw a painter around it. It made us fast.
Yeah, it broke loose, all right. If you kept this on your starboard,
hand me the boat
you
hook, Red. I want to raise this cable if I can.
Yeah, coming up.
Yeah, thanks. Red.
What do you got, Skipper?
That drunken captain didn't know how right he was.
Why, what do you got?
It didn't break loose, Red. Somebody moved this boy. metal cable usually used to anchor buoys had been cut, and a heavy manila line bent on in its place. That meant that the Lawson had been deliberately sent aground. And with $100,000 worth of gold aboard her, it wasn't hard to figure why.
Captain Reedy, I checked on the board.
Oh, Grasson, I'm glad you're here, too.
I'm trying to get the old man out of here.
Well, it's all right for you to go, Captain Reedy. The light had been moved, all right.
It what?
I told you, son. I told you something was wrong.
How do you know it was moved, Connie?
The buoy had been cut loose from its cable and re-anchored in its new position with a heavy piece of manila line.
Oh, hold back, son. You mean it was done on purpose?
Yeah. And if you weren't drowned in that liquor, you'd know why. It was done by someone who knew you had that gold aboard and knew where you were taking it. Who'd know all that?
By the devil, son.
You would, Captain. You would, Grierson.
What are you talking about?
Frederick J. Wade Woods owed his wife, Frieda. How about it, Grierson?
Are you accusing me, Connie?
I'm asking you. Why did you tell Frieda that you had nothing to worry about?
Boy, I just didn't
want to... Were you expecting another ship and another crew to board you?
I just told her that so she wouldn't worry and go all to pieces.
Maybe you and she are working together.
Now, wait a minute,
Grierson,
Connie.
This is hard to believe.
You're making wild guesses. Why suspect me? Why not the old man here?
He's the one who sent me to check the boy, remember? Oh, never mind. Wade has offered to pay me for salvaging that gold. I'm taking him up on it. I suppose I'll see both of you later.
Captain Connie, are we in danger?
Wade.
I saw you rush up to the bridge deck. I've been waiting for you.
Yeah. I thought you'd be aboard the Queen with the rest of the passengers.
Oh, Frieda and I stayed here. I wanted to be sure you'd move my gold aboard your ship. And Frieda, I suppose, wanted to be near that scoundrel Grierson. Well, that's her affair, not mine.
Where is Frieda, Wade?
Heaven knows. With him, I suppose. Why?
Wade, this ship being aground is no accident.
There's no accident? Well, who did it?
Somebody aboard was in on it. I figured that another ship's supposed to arrive to take your gold off.
Good heavens. Oh, but surely...
You said yourself she was paired off with Grierson. It would be a good enough haul for anybody.
Oh, no, no. Oh, but, Captain, you are going to salvage my gold.
Well, like I told you, I'll do what I can. Look, you can help.
Oh, anything you say, Captain, and I can assure you, you'll be generously rewarded by my company upon the successful completion of the operation.
All right, wait, where is your gold?
Locked in two strong boxes in the purser's office, to all of which I have the key.
Give me the one in the office. Then get aboard the Queen and tell Mr. Gallagher to douse all lights and get ready to receive your boxes. I'll get some steam into these winches and send them down here.
As you say, Captain.
Right away. I watched his portly figure disappear through the passageway. Then I started to work. If there was another ship in on the deal, I figured that the bad visibility had slowed her up. The sky was clearing now. I decided to give them as little help in finding us as I could. I found the master light panel. I killed all the deck lights first. Then I started on the main house. Just as I was reaching for the switches to darken the saloon, I heard a step scuff the deck behind me. I pulled the switches, threw myself prone before I even looked. First shot screamed off the bulkhead just above me. When the flash died, I rolled into a new position. Second one missed me by a more comfortable margin. Then I heard steps fading aft down the companionway. I got to my feet, made what speed I could through the pitch darkness after them. I heard a door slam just ahead of me into my right. I groped for it. Found it. Went in.
Tom!
Drop the gun, Frieda.
Who is it? I can't see.
Drop the gun.
I haven't got a gun.
What?
I haven't got a gun. I didn't have one.
Then who threw the shots?
I don't know. Oh, it's you, Captain Carter.
Yeah, who threw the shots?
I don't know. How should I know? What's happening, Captain?
Why don't you drop the axe, Frieda? Is your boy Grierson gunning for me?
Tom, why should he?
Maybe because I'm taking the gold off and messing up his chances of you two doing a fast disappearing act with it.
Captain Connie, what are you saying?
Oh, look, you aren't kidding anybody, especially your husband.
I never tried to kid anybody. Frederick knew I was going to divorce him and marry Tom. But the gold...
Somebody arranged things so that this ship would go aground. The best motive is the gold.
Oh, no, he couldn't have. He couldn't have done that.
Done what?
Oh, he was so determined to get a ship command, and he hated Captain Reedy. But he wouldn't have done this to get one.
For my dough, I wish that was behind it. Look, if you don't want to slide off into 30 fathoms when this hulk lets go of that reef, you better get over the side onto the Queen.
Not without Tom. Where is he?
I'd feel safer if I knew, Gorgeous, but I don't. Come on.
No,
get out on the deck.
Let go of me. Let go of me.
Yeah, I ought to, but I took on a rescue job and you're...
Without Tom, I won't go.
You won't have to, Frieda.
Tom, darling, where are you?
Don't try to find me, honey. Step away from me and get away from Connie. I don't want to hit you.
All right, darling.
It's time you and I settled this, Connie.
It's not too much time. This hulk is slipping.
I heard what you told Frieda, and I've taken enough of your meddling. As far as I can see, you haven't got anything on anybody aboard this ship.
I'm stealing a man's wife, but that's no crime in any law book.
You're so clean, why don't you save your story for the lawyers, Grissom?
Because I want you squared away before I leave here. I'm not going on the block for this wreck. You keep forgetting that I'm the guy who ordered that distress message sent out. The lawyers are going to like that, aren't they?
It's a good thing you did. Maybe with that bad visibility, the other ship couldn't find you. Wait a minute, Grissom.
Don't try anything, Connie. I warn you. If you do, this gun goes off.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hey, Skipper, where are you?
Don't answer, Connie.
I didn't have to. I saw the beam from a powerful flash streak into the dark companionway. I kept my back to it. When I saw it hit Grierson's face, saw his eyes wince from the sudden light, I moved in on him.
Give me the gun. Hey,
Skipper, this trunk of rust is...
Come here, Red. Get a hold of this guy, will you?
Oh, what the devil's going on?
Keep Grierson off of me. I got to talk to him.
Come here, you...
Now, calm down, Grierson. You and I both have been suckered in this deal. It was a good case against you. I don't blame you for blowing your top, but you can quit worrying. You're as clear as deep water.
You're just over-suspicious, Connie. I told you you didn't have anything on anybody on this ship. If somebody reckoned to get that gold, they're from someplace else. The visibility just kept them from getting
That's
here.
That's where you're wrong, Grierson. There is somebody on this ship. And if he'd been a little soberer, he'd have found me with one of those slugs back in the saloon.
The old man?
Yeah, Captain Reedy. He wanted the ship to go aground so he could split that gold with somebody. With the boy moved, he wouldn't be blamed for
it. Huh? You got barnacles on the brain, Skipper. Reedy was the guy that sent us out to check on the position of that boy.
Yeah, and that's where he made his mistake. He gave me that story about taking a sight on that boy. Mm. He was still trying to lift the blame from himself. But listen, with the zero visibility in that rainstorm, he couldn't have even seen that light, much less kept it on his starboard. Well, what are you waiting for? You haven't got much time. Come on, Gallagher. Get those two aboard the Queen. I'll go take care of the gold. Slung the two strong boxes over the side and onto the decks of the Scarlet Queen with as much speed as we could get out of the rusty winches and the dying steam. The tide was still dropping, and the decks of the Lawson were beginning to angle to port as well as steeply down by the stern. I headed for the chart room for the last time.
Get away from that door!
Come on, open up, Reedy. Time to go.
I said get away from that door!
Come on, you rumhead! Look, what's a prison term to a worn-out old sea dog like you? They'll feed you better than you ate on this scow.
Get away! Get away, the other ship will come for me.
They'll never make it, Reedy.
They were here yesterday.
Come on, Reedy, I'll give you a hand.
Get away or I'll bring you again.
She's going, Reedy. Look, I haven't got time to argue. I'll ask you once more. Come on, sweat it out for a few years.
Get away!
Okay, you old pirate. Okay, old pirate.
Get off of my ship! I'll sail it to Port Moresby myself, you deserting rat!
Red and I stood on the deck of the Queen, 50 yards off the reef, and watched. The tide had dropped so far that only the after half of the Lawson was in the water. The swells lifted it, twisted it, and dropped it, a little lower each time. Finally, it couldn't hang on the reef any longer. It twisted a little more to port, enough to let the water rush into its after holes. The moon broke through the clouds for an instant. I saw the figure of Captain Reedy on the bridge deck, from where he'd commanded his ship for so many years. He stood there, pushing his weight against the list of his ship, looking out over the bow. Thirty seconds later, the Lawson was out of sight. There's nothing I like about a guy who'd murder his own ship. I don't know what made me hate to see him go that way.
That crazy old sea dog.
I did everything I could to get him off, Fred.
Sure you did, Skip. Come on, we better get some cloth up and get out of here.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess I've seen enough of this reef.
morning broke fair and brisk. And in that afternoon, we found our berth at Port Moresby. We put off our passengers in Frederick Wade's gold. The generous payment we received wasn't quite as generous as his buildup had been, but split among the crew, it was enough for everyone to send a few trinkets back to the States. 2 days after that, we discharged our cargo and taken on another. Coffee and rubber for the warehouses of Darwin. We stood out of the harbor under power, found the wind, and put our figurehead onto a course up through Torres Strait and Arafura Sea.
Stand by! Make sail!
The crew, eager for an Australian port where girls on the street spoke their language and the girls in the bars spoke the same, jumped to their stations with a will.
Stand by! Make sail!
The throat and peak halyard heaved the big mainsail into its working position. The jibs went up. Then the mizzen. And we trimmed them for a close reach under the steady breeze.
Well, I guess we'll get there with this rig, huh, Skipper?
Yeah, I think we might. If nobody moves a channel boy on us.
Well, not having anything more valuable in our holds than a few thousand pounds of raw coffee and raw rubber, I guess there's no danger of that.
Or passengers, Red. Passengers will cause trouble when a cargo won't.
Yeah. That Dame Frieda, for example.
Oh, yeah. If she'd had a different type husband, the fur would have been flying.
I don't know. With a wife like that, why should he be so interested in gold?
Search me. But that Grierson brought up an interesting point.
Huh?
Stealing a man's gold is a crime, but stealing his wife isn't. How do you like that?
Well, let somebody else worry about it. The saints be praised, we aren't bothered by either.
Oh, I don't know. We aren't exactly unattached.
No, but she'll never leave with another first mate while I'm alive. To the Queen, Skipper?
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you. Log entry. The Ketch Scarlet Queen. 5:30 p.m. Wind fresh, sky fair. Sea calm with long cross swell. Ship secure tonight. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
Mutual invites you to sail into further adventure on the voyage of the Scarlet Queen next week at the same time. Porto call, Darwin. The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen stars Elliot Lewis as Phil Kearney with Ed Max as Gallagher. And tonight featured Ira Grossell as Captain Reedy. Clark Gordon played Grierson, John Daner was Wade, and Frieda was Maya Gregory. Music scored and conducted by Richard Arant. The Scarlet Queen, a command radio production, is written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman. Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. The Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position 12 degrees 12 minutes south, 130 degrees 4 minutes west. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks: cleared Darwin, Australia after altercation in Bannock Hotel. Reason for incident: the Fang Rubies and the Black Siamese. Been moored
split between two trading schooners at a dock in Darwin for 3 days, unloading the stuff we'd brought in from Port Moresby and taking on a cargo for Singapore. My chief mate Gallagher and my crew were in town, spending a few well-earned hours of shore leave. I was alone on the forward deck. I'd been watching the busy lighters wallowing between the shore and the merchantmen that were anchored in the stream. Then I started toward the cabin. I got to the shoreward rail in time to see a man hurrying along the dock. He was carrying a black cat in his arms. He looked back over his shoulder at the schooner on our stern. Then, just before he reached our gangway, he tossed the cat aboard. It landed lightly on its feet about 2 yards from me. As bad as the act was, the guy carried it through.
Beaver! Here, Beaver! Come here! Oh, my Siamese thief who jumped aboard your ship. May I come aboard after him?
I saw how he came aboard. I'll toss him back to you.
I'm sorry, but I have to come aboard after him.
He started to cross the gangway. The second shot caught him and slammed him into the guardrail. He careened off of it and hit the deck in front of me. By instinct, I headed for cover and waited for more shots.
I didn't think.
After a few seconds, I moved over to him.
Can you hide me?
Sure, I'll hide you.
And don't let my sister know until I feel better.
Yeah, all right.
Until I...
I looked back at the schooner. Her crew had cut her mooring. She was moving away from the dock. And I was left with a dead man and a black Siamese that looked up at me with motionless yellow eyes.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tolman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Inspector Tompkins, Criminal Investigation Department. Captain Carney?
Oh, yeah.
We're much obliged to you for notifying us of this incident.
That's all right.
We were obliged that you didn't give him the heave-ho into the water, which is becoming a habit in this part of the city. Well. Powers, have you been shot, have you, Chappie? You're a bit of a mess, aren't you, Chappie?
I haven't touched him except to put the sailcloth over him.
Well, now, let's, you've got a pocketbook, eh? Well, we'll have a look at that. Harold Scott, Blakely Square, Canberra. That's better. Ashenden?
Yes, sir.
Cart him off, Ashenden.
Yes, sir.
Now, Captain, suppose you give me your version of the incident in chronological order.
I don't have much of a version, Inspector. He came along the dock from the stern of my ship carrying a black Siamese. He tossed the cat aboard, then pretended it had jumped, and then he was chasing it. And that's the cat. He's been sitting there ever since.
Ah, that's an odd one.
The guy got halfway across the gangway. Somebody on the schooner got him with a rifle.
Tell me, what was the name, registry, description of said schooner, and in what direction did she proceed?
What? Well, I don't know her name or registry. She's gaff-rigged, painted gray above the waterline between 50 and 60 feet overall. She hugged the shore after she left here. I lost her behind the warehouse there on the point.
Well, this idea is obliged to you, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, since you're an eyewitness to the crime, you will remain in Darwin and keep the department notified.
Oh, not a chance, Inspector. I got a time contract on this cargo we're doing Singapore.
Then I shall have to station CID guards upon your ship to prevent you sailing.
Why don't you take your CID guard?
I'll have the guards here in a jiffy, Captain.
Hey!
Eh?
The cat! The least you can do is take him.
A gift to you, Captain, from the department.
Thanks! I went into the cabin, put a bottle and glass on my desk, and between a couple of drinks, entered the incident in the log. When I stood up and turned around, the cat was just inside the passageway. He followed me in, and he sat there looking at my face. What the devil do you want? Can't you do anything but sit there and stare? Ooh, you're in a lot of company, you are. Hey, get off of that bunk. You think you are, anyway. Come on, get off. And stay there. He tossed me a quick look after I pushed him to the deck, twisted around, and with his tongue washed the place where I touched him. Then he jumped back on the bunk. After 3 more tries, I gave up, and he went to sleep on my pillow. After a few more drinks, I gave up again. The CID man had arrived to guard the Queen, and everything aboard was secure, so I packed some personal gear for shore. Flipped a coin to decide whether I'd take the cat or leave him. Tails, so I picked him up and went ashore. I finally found a safe-looking pet shop that would board the cat. And with Siva in tender hands, I rode a bus to the middle of town. I located a room at the Queensland House, checked in, and after reporting my address to the CID, had dinner and went to my room. I stretched out on the first double bed I'd seen in months. I must have dozed off, because it took me a while to realize that the sound I heard was a knock on my door.
Yeah. Who is it? Yeah, all right, wait a minute. Yeah, what?
Hello.
Are you Philip Carney?
That's right.
I've been to the police. They told me where you were.
Hmm?
I'm Paula Scott. Harold Scott was my brother.
Oh. Well, you want to come in?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry about your brother.
Thank you. You were with him, weren't you?
Well, for a few minutes. Well, I don't think it was bad. The way he went, I mean, things like that just sound as though they're awful rough.
You're telling the truth, aren't you?
Yes, I am. If it helps any, and I don't suppose it does, he didn't even know he was going. He just stopped talking.
What was he talking about?
About getting well.
Oh. I'm glad to know that.
Yeah.
What else did he say? See, I've got to know. It isn't one of those masochistic things. I've just got to know.
Why don't you sit down?
All right, thank you. I'm sorry, there's no place for you.
Oh, yeah, it's a one-chair room. I'll use the bed. Well, there wasn't much said because there wasn't much time. He wanted me to hide him, and he didn't want me to let you know until he got better, that was all.
The police told me you have Siva.
The cat? Yeah, I put him in a pet shop where he'll get good care, I think.
Mr. Carney, I want to talk to you. I know why Harold was killed, and I know who killed him.
Did you tell the police?
No.
Why not?
Because I want to stay alive. There are two of them. If the police go to one, the other will come after me.
You want to tell me?
Yes, his name is Hugo Cashin. He's my uncle, and he has a horrible little creature with him, Merle Ferris. Have you ever heard of the Cashin interest?
Well, harbors and anchorages are the only things I know about in Australia.
They were built by Leland Cashin. Hmm? Mining sheep, contracting shipping, everything else that makes money, I guess.
Leland, he's your uncle, too.
He was. He was killed in a motor accident near Canberra 2 weeks ago, leaving Harold and me the entire estate.
Hmm?
Hugo Cashin is alive. When we die, it goes to him. But he has only one left to outlive now.
Look, I don't like despairing women. Do you want me to try and help you?
That isn't why.
Never mind why you came. If you want me to help you, act normal. Cry, pull your hair, get drunk, do something. Don't sit there looking as patient as one of your estate sheep.
Yes, I'm sorry. I want you to help me.
All right. Somebody should have taught you to cry when you were young. You'd feel better.
I can't help it.
Sure. You learned early not to let your feelings show. You want anything to eat?
No,
Well, go on in and wash your face and comb your hair. I'll have dinner set up. I figured it would take a lifetime to make her unbend and get rid of some of that reserve and some of that self-control that was tying her up in knots inside. Well, a few drinks before she ate and a few more afterward made a good start.
Captain Carney, how did you know so much about me so soon after you met me?
Well, you're a pretty obvious little girl.
Oh, dear, I am not. How did you? You're quite right, you know.
Well, you carry a very active kind of magic around with it. You're afraid of it and the reaction it has on guys like me, so you've developed a fine, icy attitude to hide that rare emotion.
Oh, you make me sound, well...
Conceited?
I'm not, really. I wonder what it is. I'm certainly not beautiful. Nobody's ever told me I'm beautiful and really meant it, just like that.
Well, just be patient. You'll get old and crotchety someday, and you won't have a thing to worry about.
Oh, a little while ago, I didn't think I'd get much older.
Hmm.
You know something? I haven't felt this way seems like forever. I mean, of course, about not being afraid of Hugo and Mel.
Yeah.
I suppose it's because I don't feel quite so alone now.
Well, that's good.
Tell me, did Hugo and Merle keep you shadowed? Would they check the hotel register?
I'm sure they would.
Well, then they know you're here.
They... But how?
Because I took a room for you in your name when I ordered dinner. It's down the other end of the hall.
Oh, Captain,
now,
I can't
stay. Wait a minute. I'm going to stay in that room. You're going to stay here. I changed the registration of this room, too. It's under the name of a very dear friend of mine on the police force, Inspector Tompkins.
Oh, but they'll come to that room. I know they will.
Well, that seems to be the best way to contact.
But I really...
Now, here's the key to this room. Leave the key in after you've locked the door. Jam one of your hairpins in with it.
Yes. Yes, all right, Captain.
Swell.
You going to go now?
Well, yeah, it's getting late.
I see. I don't think I want you to go.
Well, I've got to. You'll be all right.
Wait.
What for?
I just want...
Now, look. If I don't have some news for you tonight, I'll see you in the morning. Keep your door locked.
Yes, all right.
Good night.
Good night, Captain.
When I got in the room registered to Paula Scott, I locked the door, leaving the key in. And I did what I could to make the room look lived in to anyone cracking the door slowly to come in. It was 11:30 when I turned out the lights and settled down to wait. The building was quiet, but the restless throb of the city came through. Now and then a deep-throated call from the harbor. I'd looked at my watch at 1:15 a.m., and it couldn't have been 10 minutes later that I caught a sound so faint that I felt it rather than heard it. Then I waited for the key to be pushed out of the lock. There was a long silence before I heard the lock click. And another before the door started to swing silently open. A slim, bare arm came in first, shadowy in the faint light from the hall. A slight figure followed. Then I caught the flicker of a knife blade. I moved just before he got all the way.
All right, cut the shiver. This elbow bends backward for the rest of your life. What's your elbow?
Light out!
Not yet. Move back to the door. This way. I want some light on you.
You're breaking it.
I might at that. You're an ugly little guy. What are you carrying besides that knife? You go well healed, don't you? 25 caliber. You must be a marksman, huh? Playing with that small caliber. That service automatic. That one I'll keep. Any more?
I go. That's all.
Now get your leg up.
Ow.
That's for lying to me. Give me the leg again. Throwing knife. You do that too, huh? You're a regular blasted artillery battalion, aren't you? Any more?
Oh, ain't any more. Let go now.
All right, as soon as I get you safe in that corner.
No, lay off.
No. Now stay there.
Don't worry. I'm not getting up.
Just a punk kid, aren't you? How old are you?
Old enough to get stupid.
You sound like stateside.
Yeah, tell them when you see them to cancel the time I got coming, I'll go back.
You're Merle Ferris, huh? What you come up here for? Look, Ferris, talk or I'll start sea-booting you around this room until you do.
The Scott dame, that cat.
What makes you think she's got the cat?
Somebody's got it. She got the rest of the stuff they took in with her brother's body.
I got the cat.
You'd have money in the bank if you did.
Huh? What makes the cat so hot?
What's the difference? You got it, Cash, and it'll give you enough for it so you can hire guys like me for you to knock around.
That sounds good. Come on, get up. Where is Cash at?
A hotel, 4 or 5 blocks down. Hey, are you getting my stuff back? You and me will get along all right now.
You go like you are, and I'll keep the 45. Then I know we'll get along. Will Cashin's door be locked?
If you ain't standing in it, it will be.
Then I'll do the knocking.
What's the matter? You jumpy?
Mm-hmm. Just careful.
You think we got knocking signals like schoolboys? You read too much. Yeah, this is it.
All right, over this way.
Who is it?
That's room. You're alone.
It's me, Mr. Cashin.
All right, get over here in front of me. Move in first.
Here, Merle. What's this, huh?
If you don't like it, run your own errands from now on.
Now, both of you stay in the middle of the room.
Perhaps if I understood, young man...
He got the cat. Scott gave it to him.
So, Paula didn't get it. Well, young man, you and I must reach an agreement at once. I will pay you fabulously for the Black Siamese.
I'll have to know why you want them before I sell.
Certainly. With that cat in my possession, young man, I will prove that Paula Scott is guilty of murdering my brother, Leland Cushion.
Are you nuts?
The cat's a valuable bit of evidence. With him, and with him only, we can prove that Leland was killed, not in a motor accident, as is believed, but cold-bloodedly in his home by that girl and the deceased brother, see?
And the cat will clear everything up, huh?
The cat, together with a certain document which Leland was carrying at the time he was killed, see?
Where is the certain document?
Well, Paula has it hidden. But with the cat in our possession, we'll rout it out and her with it.
Okay. I'll make a deal with you. I'll be back here with the cat in an hour and a half. My first stop was the pet shop where I'd parked Seela. I banged on the door until I aroused the sleepy owner, apologized the same, and retrieved the Black Siamese. Then I headed for the Queensland house. Paula? Paula, still.
Just a minute. I'll be right there. Captain, nothing wrong? And Seela?
Yeah, here's the cat.
I didn't know you were going to bring him here.
Why did you lie to me, Paula?
I didn't mean...
Was it all an act?
Well, you can't mean that.
What's the real story about your uncle's death?
I see. You've seen Hugo Cushion.
That's it.
You see, I didn't know what to tell you. What if it was murder? What good would it do to have it all stirred up again?
Depends on who did the murdering.
What do you mean?
Who killed him, Paula?
Why, Hugo Cushion and Mal Ferris. Oh, it really hurts me to tell you this. My brother was involved, yes, He didn't do the actual killing. But after it was over, he was the one who pushed the car and the body off of Cumber Hills. He found some evidence in Uncle Leland's breast pocket that would prove murder, no matter how hard they tried to hide it.
I want to see that evidence. Cashin told me it would prove that you and your brother committed the murder.
He's lying.
All right, what's the evidence?
Part of it is the cat. The other part is in my handbag.
Yeah?
Here it is. Here, it's the pedigree Uncle Leland was carrying in his pocket. And see? The bullet hole?
The piece of folded paper she handed me would have fit tightly into a legal-sized envelope. The bullet hole was roughly in the middle. The angular pedigree lines traced Siva's family back to an ancestor living early in the 1700s. At the top, there were four photographs of Siva. One of them showed him with his mouth open in a yawn. You could see two tiny dark stones that were set one in each of his upper fangs. She put the cat in her lap and opened his mouth.
There. You see? There are the fang rubies that show up in the photograph.
Oh, yeah.
It's the mark of the Pasha line of Siamese. Since Siva's the only one outside of the Asiatic continent, this pedigree chart can't belong to anyone but him.
Well, it doesn't prove much yet. Could have been my cat.
No, it couldn't. Couldn't belong to anyone in the world but Uncle Leland. He was a member of the International Cat Fanciers Club.
Hmm?
Their system of identification is legally recognized everywhere. Look here. Here, on Siva's left thigh, right here. Part of fur, you can see a mark on the skin.
Hoofs. Yeah, a tattoo.
Yes, done when he was a kitten. To identify him as Leland Cushion in any court in the world.
I guess that's good evidence, but I don't get this. How does it prove murder?
Don't you see? The tattoo proves that Siva belonged to Uncle Leland. His pictures prove that the pedigree is Siva's. Therefore, the bullet hole in the pedigree papers prove that Uncle Leland was shot and not killed in a motor accident.
Now I got it.
I've kept the pedigree. My brother was hiding Siva aboard a ship in the harbor. I suppose Hugo found out he was there. My brother was trying to escape onto your ship when they shot him.
Hmm. Well, you better get dressed, Paula.
Where are we going, Captain?
Get these two stories together.
You don't know whether to believe me or not, do you?
Your cat and your rubies and charts still haven't proved anything but murder. They haven't proved who did the murder.
Yes, I know. What can I do, Captain?
You can call the police. Call them and tell them to meet us in room 12, Bonnock Hotel, in 45 minutes. I'll go find a car we can hire and meet you downstairs. A few minutes later, Paula, Siva, and I were riding to the Bonnock Hotel in silence.
took the cat when we got there, and I pushed her behind me as we climbed the stairs. When I motioned her to a stop at the door, I wasn't quite sure what I'd do inside if she were guilty. It was 35 minutes after she had or had not called the police that I rapped on the door of Hugo Cashin's room.
Who is it?
Carney. Come in, Captain.
He's brought the Scott dame.
Paula.
Move back in the room. Merle, get over in the corner. Stay there.
Don't worry about me, tough guy.
Captain, I'm disappointed in you.
Why?
Well, this was to be an arrangement strictly between us. If I'd known that you were as untrustworthy as to bring Paula to interfere
with... I'm not interfering, Hugo.
Look, Cashin, we've got the cat here. That's what you wanted. I've heard the same story from both you and Miss Scott. It was good both times.
What has this girl been saying?
I told her to call the police and tell them to meet us here. I don't know whether she did or not. What do you think, Cashin?
She'd be a fool, too.
If she's guilty, I guess you're right. Here, Cashin, you can have the same deal. If she didn't call him, you'd just as soon, wouldn't you?
Your call, please.
Well, Cashin?
Your call, please.
Cashin, you're not going to let him call the cops.
Why not? They can prove nothing.
Your call, please.
Give me the police.
They can prove nothing.
With my record, I'm not sitting in no jail cell while they sweat the truth out of you.
All right, get the cat and come on.
No, 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 stay away.
Cashin!
Phil, he's taking Siva. He'll kill him.
Oh, you there, stop. Fire, Ashington, stop those men.
Oh, Captain Carney.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Oh, Captain, there you are.
Yeah.
I thought you'd be hereabouts when I saw those blighters making off with your cat. They wouldn't stop. I had to wing them.
Yes.
But the cat is unharmed now. Here you are, with the respects of the CID.
Well, thanks, Inspector.
Did the scoundrels try to steal anything else, Captain?
Look, Inspector, this wasn't a robbery. The men you nailed committed that murder on my ship yesterday.
Oh, well, the department is Johnny on the spot, you might say. The summons we got was from some poor lady sobbing into the telephone.
What?
Well, cheerio.
Yeah, see... Paula, that was you? Wasting some of that rare emotion on a telephone?
Of course not, Captain, the inspector must have been mistaken. It just must... It must have been a bad connection.
Oh, no, come on now. Now you're overdoing it. There. No, it'll be all right.
I'm sorry.
No, you're a big girl with an estate now. Everything's making money for
you.
Oh,
no, I don't care about the money. It's you. If you could manage to stay...
I can't stay, gorgeous. I got a cargo aboard on a time contract. I got to get it to Singapore. Hey, here's your cat.
Yes, of course, thank you. Yes, I understand. You have a commitment. And you'd rather go on your ship than stay?
No, it's nothing. It's nothing personal, Paula. And I'll make you a promise. If I ever settle down on an estate in Australia, it'll be yours. Later, using the first faint light and the first fresh breeze of dawn, we stood out into the harbor.
Stand by to make sail!
It was a crew of city-numbed sailors that stumbled to their stations and groped for the halyards. It was hard to tell what was in their eyes outside of exhaustion as they watched the city lights sink astern.
Make sail!
The mainsail shook itself and tightened as it was hauled aloft. The jib went out. The mizzen. And the Scarlet Queen coasted into the morning with the foam at her starboard rail shining whitely in the first reflection of the sun from the sky.
Reporting to the bridge, sir. Is everything to your liking? Aloft and below?
What's gotten into you, Red? You spend your time reading sea stories or something in Darwin?
No, just feeling fit and hearty, Skipper. Glad to be aboard. I ran head-on into a situation.
A woman, Red?
Yeah. Oh, a lot of good home cooking and stuff, but she wanted me to settle down and share a property.
An estate, Red?
Yeah, a little truck farm.
Huh?
Yeah, well, I guess it might not be bad for a while. Evenings on the veranda and all that.
Did she have a cat, Red?
Yeah, a little white alley cat.
And she thought you were crazy for leaving, and you told her it was nothing personal, huh?
Yeah, she... How'd you know all that?
Women, Red. They're never happy till they got a guy lashed down someplace.
Yeah, imagine spending all your life walking on a floor that never rolls your pitches, huh? Ah, Skipper, I guess we got the right kind of woman. Wooden and lively. Here, Skipper, to the Queen, to the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Entry, The Catch, Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Wind fresh, sky fair. Sea calm with long cross swell. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
Mutual invites you to sail into further adventure on the voyage of the Scarlet Queen next week at the same time.
And that's this week's Mutual Presents feature. The Mutual Audio Network brings the best of old-time radio and modern audio theater to the world. Be sure to subscribe through the Mutual Audio Network podcast feed, any of our podcast days, or the Mutual YouTube channel, which includes MadCon and many other extra features and shows. See you all next time at Mutual Presents. Good night.
Now, you seem to me to be a connoisseur of the best of radio drama. In which case, make sure you're subscribed to the Monday Matinee feed. There we have our weekly series of dramatic, theatrical, classic, eclectic, and live radio drama. So yeah, either the main Mutual Audio Network feed for all types and genres of audio drama, or the Monday Matinee, and we'll see you there.
The Mutual Audio Drama Network, where we listen and imagine together.